Hey everybody, welcome to Teal Tinted Glasses, the next episode of the podcast. The San Jose Barracuda lost their third straight game tonight, and we're going to tell you why it doesn't matter. What can I say? With me tonight is Zach Devine, for always, because we can't do a Barracuda After Dark edition of anything without Zach here. What are your thoughts on the game? And obviously disappointing outcome for the Barracuda, but I'm not really too concerned about these last three games. How concerned are you?
I would say slightly. You know, this has been a really dominant team that has shown flashes, certainly, and still is, you know, immensely talented, but they're coasting a little bit. And I think that just that taking the foot off the proverbial gas pedal is a little concerning. Mm-hmm. It's not like their power play is melting down. Danny O'Regan forgot how to play hockey, and Troy Grosnick, you know, is not sure which, you know, side of the net to stand on. I mean, it's nothing like that.
Right.
But it is, I think, a little concerning, but could also be a bit of a silver lining. You know, this team, I think, has had a couple games where it's got to take a breather, but also see that, hey, this is a pretty tough league, even the teams that are outside of the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, and I'm not going to disagree. Obviously, the coasting upsets me a little bit, but it's not like, you know, a lot of people that have talked to me about it, it's like, well, oh my God, the Sharks did the same. The Barracuda did not do what the Sharks did.
Not even close.
No. Put the parallels to bed. There are none. Yeah. This is a team that, yes, they coasted their last three games when they pretty much, aside from from home ice all the way through the playoffs, should Wilkes-Barre, Scranton make it through, they really had nothing to play for.
Yeah, they haven't had anything to play for weeks.
Exactly.
Outside of the McGregor Kilpatrick Trophy, the most Irish trophy in all of sport.
Right. So, I mean, for me, like, I'm not worried about three games in this case. Like, if they go in and ghost walk, against Stockton when they meet up, I believe, what is it, Friday?
The 21st.
21st. I'm going to look at my calendar now.
What day is that?
What that is.
What's today?
Today is Saturday the 15th. The 21st is next Friday.
Oh, okay.
Go in. Woo!
I just learned two things.
So, I mean, I'm not worried, like, about the Barracuda from that perspective. If they suck, you know, in game one against Stockton, who I think is a team that they can't take lightly, then I'll be like, yeah, they should have been a little more better in the last, you know, couple of games. But, they didn't, like you said, you know, their special teams didn't fall apart. They didn't blow significant lead in the division to finish in third. Like, there's no comparison. The Barracuda played pretty much, you know, as hard as they possibly could, well after they had nothing to play for. So for me, that's kind of, you know, yeah, they took 3 days off, and you don't want to see anybody take three games off, but if anyone has, you know, if you want to, if that helps them go into the playoffs more rested or whatever, then I'm all for it, man, because at the end of the day, you know, those three regular season games don't matter. It's the playoffs that matter.
Definitely. And I don't think that this team will have any trouble whatsoever getting up for Stockton. Those are two teams that positively hate each other.
Exactly.
You know, especially after last weekend's series with Brian Bollig, with, you know, this stick tap to Roy Sommer, the fights, the Zach Stortini suspension, Bola getting off, you know, without even a talking to, as far as I'm aware. It's, you know, these are teams that have a long history. They're separated by, what, 70 miles. They play each other 12 times a year. This will be game number 13 of the season. If familiarity breeds contempt, these are mortal enemies.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I'm looking forward to this. I think this is going to be it's going to be a fun series, I think. For sure. Because, you know, like you said, I mean, these teams, like, every time these teams get together, it's it's a bloodbath. There's always, there's always a lot of shenanigans and stuff. And I think the best thing about the first round of the AHL playoffs that I actually really, really like is it's a best of five. So, I mean, you really can't sit, like, I mean, you shouldn't sit around in a best of seven, but I mean, best of five, man, three and you're done. And I think that puts a little more tension into the first round, which I really enjoy.
Yeah, it's they're going to have to get out there and kind of get back to Barracuda hockey. This is not going to be, especially in that first round, like you mentioned, this is not the postseason setup where you can kind of round into shape. You better hit those first two games and have your game together. Have it, everything firing. They're going to have a long week of practice, which, historically for the Barracuda has not been great. They've played better when they've had that midweek game to kind of keep their game senses sharp. So it'll be interesting to see how, especially game one, I think, how the Barracuda come out. But luckily it'll be at SAP Center, and it's going to be a busy week of hockey.
With the Barracuda, obviously they're going to be missing hands. Like there's no way around it. I mean, the NHL, we know the NHL team comes first, and that's the way it should be, frankly. But I mean, I think that the one thing that we just have to kind of cross our fingers for is that Sharks blue line stays healthy, because I think if they have to pull a guy off the blue line from the Barracuda, that's when I'm going to get concerned about the pieces that they're missing. If they lose a Tim Heed, or a Joakim Rönn to the press box, that's, I mean, that could be, to me, that's where their undoing could happen. And I'm kind of hoping if Jumbo can play that they will send somebody back down. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, you're right about the blue line. I don't think any NHL team can really afford to lose any top defender in the playoffs. And especially I think with the Sharks, because Peter DeBoer has been so staunchly married to his pairings. Each guy has a guy they play with, and that's that. So as soon as you lose somebody, let's say Marc-Edouard Vlasic goes down with injury, right?
Well, that's end the series. Just end
Okay,
it.
let's say Brendan Dillon goes down. Let I
Sure.
don't want
Yeah,
I,
let's go Brendan Dillon, David
right.
Schlemko here. Let's not go crazy.
No, I don't want to scare you too much, Ian. Let's say Brendan Dillon gets injured. That brings DeMello into the lineup, and that would likely bring, I would say, Tim Heed up to sit in the box.
Right, which is my guess too.
So what that does is it completely negates Tim Heed from anything. And it's not like the Sharks are going to go to Tim Heed if they need some skill, if they need, some infusion to skate with alongside Brent Burns, and they give Paul Martin a night off. That's not going to happen. We saw it last season with Dylan DeMello on the sidelines while Roman Pulak got pyloned, for six games in the Stanley Cup final. So much of really what the Barracuda do, as you said earlier, really depends on how San Jose, the Sharks do. And health is going to be a big part of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's frustrating. Like, I mean, again, and I need to preface this every time with saying I know how the AHL works and I know what their purpose is, but to see that, with having just, Kevin LeBanc, for example, just sitting in the press box right now, it's frustrating for, because like when I try to, when I come on to talk about the Barracuda, right? Like, we try to talk about it as an actual team. We're not just being like, okay, well, these guys are the future, so these guys are awesome, and these guys are a bunch of useless, AHL guys forever. It's not really the way we discuss the team. So, and I know sometimes it probably gets lost on people that, yes, I understand that the Barracuda are there to feed the Sharks, and that's it. You know what I mean?
And that's certainly the piece, and the Sharks have, over the last couple of years, been incorporating the younger players into the lineup more. and giving some jobs, some opportunities. DeMelo was kind of brought in, edged in last year, really. Same with this year, where he's kind of got it locked down. Dell's come in there. LeBanc forced the issue. Let's he
Oh, yeah.
left he left over a couple bodies on the depth chart on his way to an NHL job. But realistically, if Thornton is able to go, I'm not sure the Sharks do send anyone down, because you never know how that knee is going to
Right.
respond from game to game.
I mean, they could
So,
call anyone back up though. I mean, if they thought he could go and then couldn't go again, I mean, they could just make a recall. There's no roster limit anymore, right?
right, but at the same time, are you going to roll that dice?
Yeah,
You know,
fair enough.
he tweaks
You
something.
send LeBanc down, he gets injured, and then you can't call him back up.
Or in warm-ups, right?
Right.
I mean, if Thornton is so hurt that he's missed two playoff games, and to put some context, Joe Thornton has missed, what, 9 games in 11 years as a San Jose Shark?
Something like that. Yeah, it's something silly. Like Joe Thornton has been amazing, like as far as health goes.
Right. So
The guy's a horse.
he's missed 80% of one game per year, right?
Right.
Roundabout. And now he's missed two playoff games. If that doesn't tell you how hurt Joe Thornton is.
Right. Yeah, the fact that he can't go is just it's bad. I mean, it's serious. And I mean, we got all optimistic when he's like, "Yeah, I'll be in game one." And even though when he was skating earlier, like they showed the video of him skating, and it wasn't really much to look at. I wasn't. It didn't certainly inspire confidence in me. And I don't. I it's a skate, so it's not like he's gonna go full bore. But I was just like, that doesn't look like a guy who's gonna play first game of the playoffs when I saw him skate. So I'm hoping. I mean, look, Joe Thornton needs to come back. I mean, I hope that the Barracuda might get reinforcements for him, but no, you're not wrong. I mean, it wouldn't make sense to have everyone do that and then, have someone go down in the thing and then not have Kevin LeBanc there or Marcus Sorensen there or Timo Meier there. Just M. Hackle in the chat saying, "Let's have the Sharks lose the series so the Cuda can do well." No, let's not have the Sharks lose the series, but if they happen to lose the series, at least there's a silver lining.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that's how this works.
Yeah, we don't no one here is rooting for the Sharks to lose the series, but should they lose the series, the silver lining is the Barracuda are going to get a hell of a lot more potent very quickly.
That actually turns frightening.
Yeah, because you get Timo Meier back, you get Kevin LeBanc back, you get Sorensen back. It's silly. The names that you'll get back and then adding those pieces. I mean, those are top tier pieces for the Barracuda. This is not this isn't like, yay, we got Julius Bergman back, who I like a lot, by the way. But I mean, it's not,
He had a heck of a game today.
he did. I look at I'm a big Bergman fan. I think that the strides, like, he's got a ways to go, and I don't want to doubt, doubt that. I mean, I don't want to lead people on that Bergman's going to be a threat for the lineup next year. He's not, but the strides that he made this year, in my opinion, were very positive, especially in comparison to his pair, his other half of his pair.
I think that almost makes it more impressive that, despite the inconsistencies of his left-handed partner,
Which would be the
Bergman
one
was
Mirko Mueller, for those wondering what the hell we're talking about.
one third of the Swiss Mafia,
Yes.
and the two thirds that are now with San Jose. But yeah, I think he's kind of continued that late season push.
Right.
From last season, where it kind of clicked for him at the professional season. I think the game is slowing down. He's making better reads. The thing with Bergman that still drives me crazy is he's not moving to open and create shooting and passing lanes. He'll just
Yeah.
fire right into the shin pads and then quickly turn around and defend. And if And he's a solid skater. He's not as good a skater as Mirko Mueller or Tim Heath, but his skating is not a weakness, I would say.
Oh, exactly.
So he's got the footwork to do so, and I think that might just come with some time and some confidence. There's so much going on for a young defender.
Right.
You know, and we forget, you know, Mueller's been a pro now for what, three years now. Bergman's at two.
Yeah.
But with the London Knights, that's like maybe three. You know, that's like, you know.
Yeah, he was pretty good on the Knights too.
So, you know, we've been hearing these names and everything, and so it's been it feels like forever. But, you know, these guys are just now 21, 22 years old, so still have some patience.
So my question for you, sticking with the Barracuda going into the playoffs, and let's just say everything says how they stays the way it is, who are the players in your opinion are like the most vital now to the Barracuda's success? Like who needs to be like 100% on their game for them to not only beat the Heat, but I think to go all the way through.
I think the real linchpin here for the Barracuda is going to be the Chartier line. And I've made no bones about it. I've been very impressed with them over the last going on 2 months now. So that's Rourke Chartier at the center, flanked by Adam Holuka and Buddy Robinson. And that they've got skill, they've got size, they've got snarl, they've got speed, compete level is excellent. They play well together. They play as a unit. That's kind of that playoff style hockey that I think you're going to see, and
Yeah.
that's a line that you know Sommer has just thrown out against. It doesn't matter.
You're right. And that's a player like I think Rourke Chartier may be like it's hard to say unheralded because I mean there's so many big players that have come and gone on this team this year, you know, from again the Timo Meyers, the Kevin LeBancs. But I mean what Rourke Chartier has done on this team has been impressive. His jump to the pro game, I think, has been really. I don't want to say completely under the radar because I think he's definitely gotten his props along the way, just obviously overshadowed by some other performances by, you know, Danny O'Regan. But man, Rourke Chartier is a guy that, I mean, I really liked on Kelowna, and I really like him in the Barracuda. Like, I'm really impressed with how he adjusted to the pro game as quickly as he did.
Yeah, it's a little strange to see such a good defensive center come out of the Kelowna defensive factory out there. But it's, you know, I think he's been a player that really put it together. You know, he definitely as a 20-year-old belonged on the roster, you know, back in October. But with what he's been able to grow into, with a really a trusted kind of, you know, to make a Sharks analogy, kind of a Logan Couture type role, you know, where he's that defensive center that just doesn't matter. You know, you're going out on the ice for your 20 minutes, whoever you're up against, give them hell because we have faith in you. And so that's been a similar type role. I'm not comparing the players. I'm trying to compare, you know, that
The role
second
they play, right? Yeah.
line.
Look, guys, we're not trying
There's
to
got to
say
be.
that Rourke Chartier is Logan Couture. He's
Right.
not. But he does. I agree. He plays like a really. He does play that similar role where you can kind of just put Rourke Chartier out against any line, and you know that they're gonna do well. And you know, Buddy Robinson's great. You know, I got a question on Twitter about Buddy Robinson. Look at I. You know, again, when we talk about the team, we talk about you know who's playing well on the team. I'm not saying this guy is great because he has NHL upside. I don't know what NHL upside Buddy Robinson has at this point. But he's been really damn good on the Barracuda. So I think when I say, you know, when I say on Twitter, you know, a guy's great, it just means that he's great in the context of being on the Barracuda. If I think that there's more to it, I will probably add, like, yeah, you know, this guy's great and he's gonna have a good future in the NHL. You know, like when I talk about Joachim Ryan, the most complete defenseman in the system. The guy's a future in the system. He's gonna be an NHLer at some point. You know, Buddy Robinson, not sure, but man, he's been damn good for the Barracuda this year.
You know, Buddy Robinson's an older prospect, and he's had some cups of coffee with the Ottawa Senators before the trade. Again, I think we can't stress it enough. With 25 jobs opening, you know, over in the southern Nevada desert this fall, there's going to be players like a Barclay Goodrow, like a Buddy Robinson, that jobs, maybe not jobs per se, but opportunity certainly. Very long looks, teams that lose somebody in expansion that now have a book on Buddy Robinson. You know, he's been a pro for a couple years. He's played in Eastern Canada. He's now been you know, he's part of a hopefully a long playoff run with the Barracuda. There were 16 scouts in California last week for a really great West Coast week of hockey. So there's going to be opportunities that abound for a lot of these fringe players, and I think you could certainly slot in Buddy Robinson there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because I think that's what basically, you know, the question in the chat was, you know, is he a journeyman? I would say he's a fringe NHL player. I think he's a guy who could get a cup of coffee on your fourth line, you know, injury replacement. Maybe not on the Sharks because they're so deep with prospects right now. Mm-hmm. But for a team that maybe doesn't have a deep prospect pool, who's just kind of flooded with AHL journeymen that's making up most of their team, Buddy Robinson is an absolute guy. I think you could call up and rely on him for some responsible fourth line minutes for sure. But again, you know, fringe guy, not a sure thing. Does Stortini have NHL upside? No, Stortini started in the NHL. Stortini has a ton of NHL games under his belt. The problem is that he went the way with, he's stuck in the NHL with the rest of the one-dimensional enforcers.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I don't think he has a way back because the game has moved away from that type of player.
Right.
Let's see if there's any other cool questions in the chat before we move on. Yeah, looks like we're good. Anyway, thanks for watching, obviously. I know it's busy time with the playoffs being here. I'm sure there's playoff games that, you know, I'm sure some people are watching the Ducks and the Flames. I know I was watching that playoff, the overtime with the Leafs and the Capitals. So how did you feel about Rod and DeSimone tonight? I like DeSimone. He really seems to stand out to me on the ice, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of DeSimone next season.
Yeah, you know, Rode actually got his first AHL point on DeSimone's first AHL or professional goal slash point. So it was nice to see those two connect there. I thought Rode played well overall. You know, you still see a lot of the Euro in his game.
Yeah.
You know, he carries a lot of speed. He'll skate himself out of good positioning to keep his speed up, to keep his feet moving. And that's what you're going to do on the bigger ice surface, because you never want to have to go from a dead stop out there on the 200 by 100. So it's going to be an adjustment. You know, he's played years on the international ice surface. He's played two games here. It's going to be a process. For a young player, I thought DeSimone has played well. You know, this was his fourth game now. You know, had a nice goal. You know, right-handed shooting defenseman, you can never have too many of, especially with offensive upside.
And I like just the response, like how quickly they responded to that goal with that one too.
Yeah, right. And that's where I thought, you know, maybe this is where the Barracuda snap back. They realize that, you know, it's the last game. They're a bit behind it. And we've seen this team have the ability to really put the throttle down and take over games. And that's the portion where I'm hoping it's just a little bit of a young team that doesn't quite – that's looking forward a little bit too far to the playoffs. I'm hoping that's what it is. And if it isn't, that first period against a hungry Stockton team that's been playing playoff caliber hockey for the last 6 weeks – they're going to get punched in the mouth really good.
Mm-hmm.
So one way or another, they're going to find out about it.
Yeah, no, I think that's true too. Cause, I mean, you got a lot of guys playing, you know, that are going to be going and playing their first professional playoff games. I mean, you know, a lot of these guys are no strangers. I mean, you know, Rourke Chartier played in the Memorial Cup final. But I think that.
So did Huluka. Still that,
yeah, and so did Huluka, exactly. Well, he didn't play in the final, but he was in the tourney.
Oh yeah, with Red Deer. Yeah.
Whereas, who did they lose to? Kelowna lost to, I want to say, Oshawa?
Could have been.
Yeah, not important.
Kelowna's there constantly, it seems.
It does. It really does. Like,
like
I was surprised. Like, they kind of had an up-and-down season, and And to have that go, I don't even know what I'm trying to say anymore. In the chat question, how do the AHL playoffs compare to the NHL playoffs? They're playoffs, man. Those guys, no one's down there thinking, well, this isn't the Stanley Cup, so I don't care. For a lot of those guys, like that's as good as it gets for them, and that's as good as it'll ever get for them, is the Calder Cup playoffs. So, that's for some guys, that's their Stanley Cup, and for others, I mean. Look, you don't get to this level. You do not get to the pro level of the game by not wanting to win, by not, these guys, they play to win. There's no critique of players no more than that annoys me more than, oh, they just don't want it, blah 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 blah. It's so stupid. You can't get to this level of hockey without having compete in there, period.
Right.
Like
Now.
it's the most stupid criticism that you'll ever come up with, and occasionally I know I slip and I say stupid things out of anger because I'm a fan, I'm a fan too, but it's such a stupid criticism. So from what I've seen of the Calder Cup, man, it's playoffs, man. Any playoffs are good. I don't
Right.
think there's bad playoff hockey in any league. I'm sure if I paid attention to the ECHL long enough, I'm sure the ECHL playoffs are probably even good. I mean, these guys want to win, period.
Yeah, last year I watched the SM Liga final with Patrick Laine's Tappara versus HIFK, and that was a hell of a series. Ville Husso was IFK's goalie. He's now with the Chicago Wolves. He's a St. Louis Blues prospect, and Patrick Laine was magical. And no matter which league, what level, when you get into playoffs, these are this is sport. This is competitive. You ask some 8-year-olds playing a pickup game, they know which side is winning. So professionals that have been honing their craft for years and years and years with myopic focus, on being in the postseason at whatever level they're in, I'm not worried whatsoever about want. It's more a matter of just getting back to that gear that they were in
Absolutely.
later in the season.
Another question from the chat, and one that I was going to ask. Who do you see? We've seen a lot of names come in, a lot of fresh faces come in. Do you think that? Who do you see having the best chance to be, a regular playoff player who sits, who might find themselves, as more of a black ace role for the Barracuda, and who, of the new faces is going to draw in, and who might they bump out?
I think DeSimone has the best chance to play a regular role, more so because Sommer all year has been completely comfortable going with seven defensemen.
Right.
He's probably done that, I would say, at least half of the games. I don't have any, I haven't been keeping track, but it's been noticeable. Depending on what he needs to do, sometimes he needs to get some extra time for a forward. Sometimes he wants to get some rest for Ryan and Heed for once. Other times it's just keeping a defender fresh. I could see DeSimone being that power play specialist. I would much rather see DeSimone on the second unit than say a Mirko Mueller.
For sure.
So I that would be a strategical deployment, I think, of DeSimone. McCauley has really impressed. For a player where you look at his numbers, with the Cougars and
That was kind of a head scratching signing for me when it
a little
happened.
bit, but the more I've watched him, he's got good feet.
Right.
He's smart. He's still learning a new system, but the pieces are there. You can see that he knows his role. He knows what he's supposed to do. He's got a fair amount of skill. Good, he's got checks a lot of boxes. So
Yeah.
I think he might kind of get in there. I would probably play him over, say, probably a John Martin, who I think has really struggled at times this year. Alex Schoenborn can be a player that you deploy when against the Heat, because he's a big, heavy, mean kid. He's built like an absolute tank.
Yes, yeah.
So I think McCauley could be in there in that mix. depending again on who you're playing, what your deployment is, if you have last change,
Right.
if you can help shelter that fourth line and turn them into an energy line at home, great.
Do you think Shane Bourne has a better chance to be in the lineup more regular than like a Stortini or a Gallant, or do you think that those guys are probably going to still try and being
I think
better
those guys will
presence?
probably still, they know how to handle themselves. Really, Alex Gallant is one of the last true enforcers left
Yes.
in the, minor league guys. There's a number of NHLers like a Paul Bissonnette, a Zach Stortini, Brendan Bolick, guys that have edged out of the NHL in that role, but they can still play hockey. And at the AHL level, they are complete power forward types,
Right.
where they're gonna, Brendan Bolick, had more, he had double digit goals this year, for the Heat.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Alex Gallant is a certified bona fide one dimensional face puncher. That's what he does, and
Yes.
he does it pretty well considering his size. So the but then the Heat, they've got a like a Jamie DeVane. They've got some certified face punchers
They've,
on their side.
yes.
So I think it'll really depend, and I think there's going to be a bit of a chess match with the lineups.
I'm so jacked for this. Like, I can't wait. Like, I'm so excited for Barracuda playoff hockey. And I definitely like when we drew the Oilers, and I just like dread, just more dread than anything. And now this, I'm just like, let's go. Let's get this going. I'm hoping that people show up too. That'd be nice.
So, Lady Dragonborn asks, "How is Bumblebee, which is the name she gave Clark Saunders, due to his
His
pad
epic
assortment?"
pads.
Yeah, he was backing up Grosnick again tonight. He's been the they've been kind of been sharing that backup role. I've not been wildly impressed with Saunders. I think that would be fair. His rebound control has been suspect in both games. He's battling. He's kind of a battle goaltender. I see him a bit like an old school Alex Stalock style, fighting for every save. But the flip side of it is, Armalas with that save percentage really,
Right.
he's more than likely going back to Europe. So you need to figure it out. Grosnick won't be in San Jose next year. He's not going to jump over Dellert Steel Jones's job. So he's going to go on where he might have opportunity. Armalas goes back to Europe. I would imagine Saunders moves on from his tryout, and we'll have two new goalies to discuss. And Gehagan, I don't know. I talked to him after a game down in the tunnel, and it was the same game that was it Saunders' first start? I
I
believe
believe
so.
so, yeah.
And afterwards, he was hanging out with Troy Grosnick, who had the night off. He wasn't even backing up. So I'm not sure, and I've had a hard time getting to practice lately. It's just one more thing I keep forgetting in my notebook to ask, so I'll add it
Right.
again. But generally, Sommer won't give me much information on signings. He'll refer me to the front office, who will refer me to a cone of silence.
Right.
So, but we'll try again.
Joe Will's the guy that runs the Barracuda, right? He's the Barracuda GM.
He's a Barracuda GM, but obviously, he's lockstep with Doug Wilson.
Right.
Joe
'Cause he's
Will's
also the
been
assistant GM of the Sharks.
right, and
Right.
Joe Will's been with the organization, gosh, 20 some odd years now.
Yeah, something crazy like
Yeah,
that.
so he's had a very long tenure as a Sharks front office.
Did Christine asking if the Flames called up many key pieces from the Heat? That's a fantastic question, 'cause that's one series I haven't really been paying attention to so far. Off the top of your head, any regulars from the Heat that are currently living in Calgary?
Rasmus Anderson is he's a teammate of Kevin LeBanc for at the Barrie Colts. Last season, he was called up for a couple weeks, and he was in the press box every single night except for one. And as soon as he got his NHL debut, they sent him back to Stockton.
Right.
So with that, with him back, there's none that certainly none that jumped to mind.
Yeah, no, and that's the other thing too, 'cause I don't think there's really anyone up there. Like, if the Flames, like, right now, I'm not sure what the score is. Last I looked, it was tied. I think that's one benefit to the Barracuda too, is that if the Flames get bounced early, I don't really think that there's super reinforcements coming.
No. The flip side of that is they have some eligibles.
Yeah.
Matt Tkachuk could certainly come down.
He could. That's true.
And so that's and that would be a very, very scary player to face at this level, because
Yep.
he's
Oh yeah, he would dominate.
he's scary.
And he's mean.
I mean, if in a series that already is going to have plenty of blood and guts, adding Matt Tkachuk, I would just bring an extra ambulance to every game.
Probably.
Just in case. It's a bit of a scary one. Let's see. I'm looking at their roster super quick. No,
Yeah,
no,
I didn't even think
no.
about Tkachuk. Yeah, he'd absolutely be able to come down.
Yeah. So yeah, they could send Tkachuk. They've got Elliott, Lazar, maybe.
I feel like Lazar has too many games.
Yeah, he might. John Gillies, actually. Calgary Flames have him scratched. So
Right.
that's kind of a six in one hand, half dozen in the other. John Gillies is probably going to get a look at the backup position next year. He's got a very good pedigree. Tonight's starter for the Condors, Nick Ellis,
Right.
and John Gillies were
I'm
teammates
curious.
at.
It's funny. I'd like to go back to like the I'm gonna have to go back check the waiver wire for the trade deadline to see if they sent could if they did the paper transaction for Tkachuk or not.
Oh, that's a good question too.
Right, because if they didn't do the paper transaction, he's not eligible. I have to go back and look. So stay tuned. I will answer that at a future thing. I'm probably gonna, we're both gonna write stuff about this, let's be honest. We're friends here, but in print we're mortal enemies. As we link each other's tweets
Well, it's it, there's plenty of room for there's always room for opinion,
Absolutely.
but kind of the storyline goes in kind of one direction.
It really does.
Somebody can't come out with a story about how terrible Joakim Ryan is. You might have a different take. You might think different things or different
Sure.
strengths or different NHL
I mean, we've
upside.
disagreed on
Yeah,
players.
no, definitely.
Absolutely.
But it's not all going to set and be like Danny O'Regan, future Southern Pacific
Southern
Hockey
Pacific
League.
Hockey League bust.
Right? There's only so far you can move away from that.
Yeah, no doubt. Thank you. Score update 2-2. Curtis Lazar, again, there's another guy who I don't know. He might be. I don't know. I don't know where they what they did. Again, it's the eligibility plus. I mean, because waivers are still a thing. Waivers don't go away, and I have a hard time believing that Curtis Lazar still has any waiver eligibility left.
Yeah.
I mean, even if a team claimed him, like he wouldn't be eligible for the playoffs, but they could still claim him and use him next year. So Chuck McDestiny's saying that they did not do a paper transaction on Tkachuk. Now, the dangerous thing there is that just because it isn't reported doesn't mean it didn't happen. But that's positive. So if he does end up being down there, don't be surprised. Because a lot of times, like paper transactions like this don't go. I mean, we wouldn't know about the, me and Zach kind of force other people's hands into reporting this stuff because otherwise we're just going to run with it in San Jose because like in previous years I think this is the first year that paper transactions were actually reported on by I don't want to say real people,
Anyone.
but by anyone really. Normally it was just something that I would just tweet out myself. But this year, like, I was kind of surprised to be kind of beaten to the punch by absolutely everyone, like Pichelka, Kurz. Damn them.
Well, it's one of those things where you've got young players that
people care about.
That people care about, and then can come in and start kicking people out of roster spots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a lot of fans, you know, and to the great folks watching us now, you know, you folks know just about everything at every level of the organization. You know, you're interested in the prospects, you're interested in the AHL.
Yeah,
a lot
you
of
guys
fans
are the hardcores, man.
Right.
Don't let anyone tell you different. You guys are the hardcores. The fact that you guys will come here and listen to us to shoot the breeze about the AHL team, I mean, you guys are the hardcores, all right?
After a loss.
And yes, after a loss, no less. And then after, not only that, but then after, like, you know, you guys don't only do this, like, on a night like tonight, but then you were here yesterday and you'll be here tomorrow. And, I mean, you know, to put that much time into listening to a bunch of schmoes like us talking hockey, I mean, that's hardcore.
And there's always more for the hardcore. And those are the folks that are forcing, you know, the interest that's starting to bubble up. So you're getting
Absolutely.
A lot of fans who might not even know who's on the Sharks' fourth line now with, we'll call them other media outlets, reporting mm-hmm. on some of these interesting moves. You know, that's going to build interest. It's going to build familiarity with the AHL club. You know, because all of a sudden somebody's like, who the heck's Marcus Sorensen and why do I care? And then you see Marcus Sorensen play. It's like, oh, where'd he come from?
Absolutely,
oh, he
yeah.
was in the exact same building just on Tuesday night. You know, that's
right.
going to help.
So, I mean, I'm happy with what the Bears could do. I'm excited for them to go in the playoffs, and I'm excited that, you know, they're starting to get some love by people other than just us. I think that's you know, more hockey information out there, the better. Period. Like, I don't, you know, some people are like, oh, are you mad that Kurz is doing this now? No, not really. I mean, I would rather more people care about the Barracuda. I'd rather SAP Center not look like a deserted nuclear wasteland after during a Barracuda game. Like, I'd rather people be in the building. So I'm hoping that during the playoffs, you know, people are going to go and give this team a look, give this team a chance. There was a question in the chat, like, are we concerned about the Barracuda based on the call-ups? No, not really. This team is really good still. Would this team be better with, you know, with three of their top forwards back in the lineup? Of course they would be. But there's still more than enough there. I think, you know, again, it goes back to your guys that maybe don't get the press that a Timo Meier or a Kevin LeBanc or a Dan O'Regan, who's going to be on the team, or a Marcus Sorensen get. You know, there's the Charchés, there's the Buddy Robinsons, there's, you know, Barclay Gaudreau. These guys, you know, these guys are still good players, and there's still enough there that I think this team can be competitive all through the AHL playoffs. Would they be better with the guys back? Of course they would be.
Right.
But you know, going up against the Heat right now, this team is good enough to take out the Heat as it is right now at this very moment.
Right.
You know, going forward, are they going to need some help? Maybe. Sure. I mean, you know, it's not going to get any easier. Next round, you probably play the Gulls. Would you agree with that? You think the Gulls take out the Heat? Or the Rain, sorry?
I think that somehow the Gulls win in two.
Yeah, so there you have it.
that series is going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah.
Even without Montour and Shea Theodore, the
yeah.
Gulls are, I mean, Kai Kosola is a prospect that I'm really bullish on. Signed out of St. Cloud State. He's going to be giving Sharks fans fits in the very near future.
Yep.
Still plenty of pieces all up and down that roster, and it's going to be tough.
And what scares me is I think the Knights won tonight, but should the Knights go out, then you're probably adding Max Jones to that, Ricks. No?
Probably. And if there was ever a player that was built for Randy Carlyle, it was Max Jones.
Yeah, and that scares me too. I mean, for me, the Condors, like, they're the team that I, out of the entire field, they're the team that I think I'm afraid of the most. Maybe the baby penguins on the other side, but
Wait, the condors? Did I hear that
condors
right?
scare me the most. Like, I
Condors
feel
are
like, or not the condors, sorry,
the gulls?
the gulls, wrong bird.
Okay, no,
Yeah,
I'm
wrong bird.
crazy. And yeah, and I was like, wait a minute.
Wait a minute, the condors suck in. No, the gulls, sorry. They're the team that I think scare me the most out of any team in the field. And the fact that we're going to see them very likely second round, unless the rain can take care of business, which, hey, look, it's playoffs, anything can happen.
Except
But
that.
except that, okay.
San Diego is up 5-3 right now on the Ontario Reign in a preview of the first round matchup, and you can expect more scores like that down in Southern California.
Are any of these games going to be televised? I mean, maybe regionally. I know that the Calder Cup finals, I believe they stream for free.
I think so.
So they did last year. They streamed them for free last year. So, there is that. I mean, I wish I could, I wish I could point you in the right direction otherwise, but mostly some teams have regional deals, and then there's teams like the Barracuda who just don't.
My understanding actually is that the Gulls are, they have a local TV deal.
Oh, that's sick.
And they have, they were, last I checked, leading the AHL in attendance. So that's, that's a heck of a club down there. And ultimately, I think it's going to be the Gulls, and the Barracuda, and that's going to be a heck of a series.
Just a question about the obviously the NHL retained the rights to the Seattle metropolitan name. I wouldn't read into that, but man, that's something for a completely. We'll look at.
We got all
There's going to be
summer.
a lot of hockey to talk about this summer, which means there's no hockey to talk about this summer. We'll find things to make up. That is a topic that we can cover on a very, in the future. We'll talk all about stuff like that. I don't want to say nonsense like that because I want people to actually watch. But we'll talk about stuff like that in the summer. Let's change gears here a little bit. We gave the AHL team all kinds of love.
Wait, I have my AHL interview questions for you, Ian.
Oh, okay. I'm ready.
Okay. Who's your San Jose Barracuda MVP besides Danny O'Regan?
Oh,
I
man.
know, right?
Besides Danny O'Regan, I mean, to me, it's O'Regan. Let me think here. It's got to be Tim Heat at this point, right?
Okay.
I think Tim Heat. I wrote about this way back, way back. I think it was on Pucknology, actually. Tim Heat's the straw that stirs the drink.
Okay. Most improved forward.
Most improved forward is easily Nikita Yevpilov's.
That was the most predictable.
Sorry. I love Yevpilov's though, and he's really is. He really is the most
Yeah.
improved forward in my opinion.
Right. Most improved defender.
Julius Bergman.
Okay.
Bergman again, like he's not super on his way to the NHL right now, but compared to the way he was playing last year, it's night and day.
And then,
He's
which Barracuda are you most excited for next year?
Which Barracuda am I most excited for next
So,
year?
like a step forward or more, more time to develop, however you want to take that slant.
I think it's Rorke Scharpe because it's going to be his team next year. I think he's going to be the guy that they look to. I think Danny O'Regan's a Sharp next year.
Yeah.
So I think Rorke Scharpe is going to be the guy that, everything's kind of going to go on his shoulders, and I think it's going to be, interesting to see how he handles that and if he can, take that next step and be the catalyst for this team.
I could definitely see that because, yeah, you look at, we were talking about job opportunities.
Right.
And so O'Regan probably gets a very long, 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 long look at a roster spot. Goudreau is, I would put in that fringe NHL spot. So with 25 new jobs, he might be Moving on,
I
right?
would, you know what I would do with Barkley Goodrow is if they move him, like if they can win a colder cup, I think you could actually get a pretty decent return if Goodrow has a decent playoff run. Like not super decent, but more better than you could get for him now. I think, you know, you could easily flip a player like a Barkley Goodrow at the draft and get a, you know, maybe a second, third round pick for him.
Yeah, I was gonna say mid-round pick, so like a 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, I think you get a third if with a Calder Cup if he has a decent run though.
Yeah, no, and you know he's led the Barracuda in goals.
Right.
You know he's got some NHL experience for scouts to draw some tape on. So yeah, I mean maybe if some team's really bullish on him and feels like he's you know a difference maker on a third line with some skill and snarl, sure.
Yeah, I you know, like Barkley Goodrow is a guy who I've said repeatedly, like this guy's an NHLer on a few other teams right now.
Right.
He's just but he's been completely dominated, passed over on the Sharks depth chart. I mean, there's no any role that he could fit, there's a guy that can fit it better, you know.
Right.
I think that if you want to talk, I mean, obviously look at Timo Meier's obviously got a much higher ceiling. But I feel like you can get just as much out of Timo Meier in the NHL level than you could at Gaudreau for the role that right now, the role that they could both play. I think Timo Meier can do it better.
All right. And then who's the player on the Barracuda that the Barracuda will miss the most next year?
Troy Grosnick.
Agreed.
Look, you know what? I think. Grosnick would be the obvious one, but let's go for people that I think are like that are just gonna move up, and I'm gonna say Timo Meier. I think Timo Meier's a full-time NHLer next year. He might not be playing, you know. I think he's gonna be in a more bottom six role as he learns his craft. But I think that Timo Meier's gonna be, you know, a guy that's gonna sit there in the bottom six next year, and he's not gonna be available to the Barracuda at all.
M. Hackle in the chat says if his skill, and I believe that's referring to O'Regan, is good enough to make his size weakness not as significant, then I'm not worried about O'Regan. I would certainly agree with that. I think Danny O'Regan is one of those smallish players, but he has the vision and the hockey sense where and we haven't even seen it at all this year. I haven't seen Danny O'Regan get blown up.
No.
And I think that's an even bigger issue at the AHL level, where you do have some fringe players running around just trying to bang bodies, create havoc, and get in fights. The NHL is obviously a faster game, but I haven't seen anything that would concern me regarding Danny O'Regan's size outside of just pure physical force along the boards. Because at that point, yes, when you're going up against who's a huge centerman these days? Like one of those monsters.
Everyone.
Yeah, if you were going to go up against, why am I blanking?
I know. You'd think like it's name a big center, like they're all big. Why
They're
can't
all
I name one?
big, yeah. Yeah, Hansel. There we go.
Yep,
Thank
Hansel,
you.
perfect.
God, chat saving my bacon.
Yep.
Danny O'Regan's gonna rely on positioning, leverage. Kopitar's another great example. Thank you, Brian Boyle. Now they're reining in. Here we
Yeah,
go.
there we go.
Now
You guys are the best.
let's start breaking down the top 6'4" centers in the NHL next on Teal Tinted Glasses.
Nice.
There's ways smaller players can deal with that. They can, get pressure on the bigger guy's hips to push them out of the way. They're going to get leverage under them. So there's things that he can do. But if it came to just a full-on grind fest along the boards, Danny O'Regan's going to have issues, just like Joe Pavelski is. So,
You know, and the thing that gets lost in a lot of talk around Danny O'Regan is this guy can play wing. Like, he doesn't have to be an NHL center. He could play wing and excel very well on somebody's wing. And you know, so maybe, you know, a lot of people are obviously concerned because he's a small guy that he's going to get pushed around at center. Fine. Throw him on a wing. Throw him on Tomas Hertl's wing.
Yeah, he had he only played one of his 3 seasons at wing. He had this one so-so kid named Jack Eichel as his center.
Yes. Yeah, right, exactly.
But that again fits, and we talked about this a show or two ago. The Sharks have an MO, when they draft players, and you look at O'Regan, he's a center that's versatile, that's smart, with good hockey sense, character kid, 4-year college pro. It sounds like Joakim Ryan, only Joakim Ryan skates backwards.
That's it.
They've got a number of these youngsters that they, Charlie Coyle spent, I think he left a year early, but same thing, Sharks draft pick, used him in the trade to get Burns, but Pavelski spent 4 years at Wisconsin. They were patient with Couture. This is kind of turning into what the Sharks look for. And so you get O'Regan checking a lot of those boxes. I would be completely fine with him being on the wing, because then you've got another center to help. If you can play center, you can play anywhere.
That's exactly. That's kind of where I was going with that. Like, this guy doesn't have to be a center. I would be fine with him being a center. I think he's an excellent center. But you know, if the Sharks decided that that's not what they wanted to do in the NHL, then you could throw him on a third scoring line on the wing. And you know, I mean, I'd like to see the Sharks go to a system where they just roll 4 lines, and you know, one line isn't weighed down by you know, excess stuff. But Daniel Regan, I mean, he could center that fourth line. He could wing on, you know, maybe, I don't, I, you know, again, we've he's done really good in the AHL, but you don't want to over project based on one good AHL year. You know, but yeah, I mean, you know, I see in the chat, like, you could see him on Couture's wing. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the sky's the limit for a guy like Daniel Regan. The smarts are there.
Right.
I think he might have more upside on wing than at center.
Right. You take away a little bit of that responsibility and let him use some of that creativity. And he's got that elusiveness. He sees the ice really well, and the puck just kind of gravitates towards him. That could really help. Actually, today, speaking of vodka, Vince G, as per usual, kind of my muse on some of these ideas. I've got a piece of scratch paper around here somewhere. I'm going to find it. Ian, come on back to me.
Okay.
Buy me 30 seconds here.
Buy you 30 seconds. Another player that I think, because I know it was in the chat, like, just anyone else that I think could make the jump next year. I think Timo Meier makes the jump. I think Kevin LeBanc's a guy next year. I mean, it depends on who they bring back, obviously. Thornton, Marlowe are obviously two huge question marks at this point as to whether they come back or not. My gut says that at least one of them's back. I don't know about both of them. It depends on money, obviously. But I feel like they have players that are ready to go now. And so, yeah, I mean, a Daniel Regan, I think Daniel Regan could be on the line. Look at, if I'm San Jose and I'm going into the expansion draft, and I know that I have to, you know, a lot of people look at the expansion draft, and they kind of just go, well, I can just protect everyone important, and that's that. It's not completely work like that. Like, you have to leave, there has to be players that you leave exposed that fit a specific criteria. And you know, so fitting that specific criteria, a guy that I would leave exposed is Chris Tierney, because
Right.
I feel like Daniel Regan could easily slip into to Chris Tierney's role, and eventually we wouldn't even miss Tim. Sorry, I'm getting distracted by a chat. We wouldn't even miss Chris Tierney at all. As far as Tim Heed goes, here's the thing with Tim Heed, guys. You need to sign him. He's a UFA, so he can sign anywhere. The Sharks don't own his rights, because if he would be a what is called a Group 6 free agent, he applies for he can he he can apply for he can declare himself a Group 6 unrestricted free agent because he has enough pro hockey under his belt and played a, and has played a year in the NHL. He doesn't need to wait till he's 27 to declare as a free agent. If you look up free agency, you can see all the different things that I don't have in front of me. I don't want to break that down too much. So Tim Heed comes back, right? If he comes back, this is a guy that the Sharks basically, if they're going to sign him, this is a guy that they need to be damn sure is going to be in their, you know, top six or at best their seventh D. Because the second that Tim Heed is sent down, he will be lost to waivers. Someone will snap him up in a heartbeat. Yep. The other thing is because he's an unrestricted free agent, I think a lot of teams are going to take a good look at Tim Heed, especially a team that is struggling on their second power play unit, that needs a guy to be able to go out there on their second unit, or just, you know, or a team like, let's look at a team like, I don't know, look, I mean, you know, you got like maybe even a team like the Flyers who just need a veteran guy in there to help these kids, because the Flyers have just this plethora of young defensive talent, you know, and he could come in and be a mentor guy. So,
see, I see Tim Heed somewhere like Edmonton,
Edmonton's another place that could go.
Edmonton has just this entire complement of defensive defensemen. Mm-hmm. Oscar Klefbom, who's, you know, I've been a fan of his for a while. I didn't think he'd be quite this good. Mm-hmm. Pardon me. But, you know, he's been excellent. But outside of him, you look at the offensive abilities. I've never been sold on Darnell Nurse. Going back to his draft year, I thought Ristolainen was head and shoulders better than him. I got grief like you wouldn't believe on it. And now I just count, you know, all those LOLs that I've been able to send out.
I love Darnell Nurse, but I do accept that there's some bias there for me. So
yeah, no, it's, and you know, I'm not judging you because you're a Sioux fan. You know, we can still be friends.
That's true.
You know, from afar, thankfully. But but I mean, Tim Heed, you look at it, and again, I keep coming back to this because I feel like this is a point that folks really need to remember. It's not just that a new team is coming into the NHL, it's that all of those jobs are going to shuffle around, and it's going to open up opportunities, viewings, battles all over the NHL. So you're going to have players that might not have been able to get, you know, a really long look at training camp. All of a sudden it's like, well, we have to take one of these two guys. Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, I still, you know, kind of going back to the theme, I think the Sharks lose a defender.
I mean, that's the most likely case scenario. But there's possibilities that a guy like Chris Tierney could be the guy to go.
Could be, you know, but I think if I'm Tim Heed, I'm looking, and we saw it with Dylan Sandoe, you know, you're going to sign somewhere where you've got a more realistic shot.
Yeah.
Unless somehow Doug Wilson is going to guarantee Tim Heed to be, you know, this 5-6-7 defender on the San Jose Shark, depending on where his play is. Mm-hmm. You know, if he's signed him to a one-way contract, maybe. You know, far worse NHL cities than San Jose, California.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, look, I'd like to see he come back, but I don't think it's the given that everyone thinks it is. That's all. Like, be prepared for the fact that Tim Heed might not be in any form of TL next year. And, you know, and look it, he's earned it, man. He had a really good season in the AHL, and I think that he could definitely help a team out. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, depending on what happens. I mean, maybe something happens in San Jose and he's the guy they go to, but I don't expect the Sharks to bring him back unless they're damn sure. Because if they do, like, and they don't keep him up at training camp, the second they send him down, he's going to be a waiver claim.
Yeah, I don't think he would... Again, right-handed power play quarterback, professionally experienced defender that's already been called up twice, three times, mm-hmm. and gotten into one game. plenty of SHL games where, you know, their Euro scouts have a book on him. There's just simply no way. You know, it's going to take a one-way contract for him, or, you know, he's going to be somewhere where he's not going to have to leapfrog 6, 7, 8 guys.
Right. All right, so let's change gears a little bit here, because, you know, I guess NHL playoffs are kind of important. what's your thoughts been on the playoffs so far?
They've been fine.
They've been fine. What about let's go through some series. What the
are the Sharks playing?
Chicago?
Are the Sharks playing in the playoffs?
Apparently, yeah. They had a couple of games so far. There was a good one, and there was a not so good one.
Yeah, there was a conference call this morning. DeBoer had some comments after last night's loss. So you can go back and I tweeted out some quotes there that were interesting. And you know, everyone's freaking out about the power play. You know, a lot of fans are up in arms about it. But you know, DeBoer had a point. You know, it scored in one game and it did it in another.
Yeah.
If your power play was going to be perfect every time it was sent out there, you would never lose a game. So at the end of the day, you know, they've got the pieces. They've got, you know, he thought that it was just a desperate Edmonton team knowing what a 2-0 hole would have been.
Right. I don't think that should be discounted too, because I know that a lot of people are kind of like scoffing at the idea. Well, it's like, you know, the fact that they're coming home with a split is honestly not the worst thing in the world. Like, I understand that last game was frustrating. Look at, I was ticked off with last game too. You know, It wasn't exactly the Sharks, not even, I don't think even half their best effort. You know, like the just things just didn't work for the Sharks yesterday. But at the same time, like this was an Oilers team that we knew was going to push back. Like they weren't going to get this Oilers team wasn't going to get dominated like they did for the later half of game one for the rest of the series. And anyone expected that is just foolish to begin with.
Right. And I think that's certainly a huge piece of it. You know, they were going to come back. They were going to solve a couple things. McClellan did a good job of keeping Couture and Pavelski away from Connor McDavid. That had a big impact,
huge.
I think.
Huge.
So it's going to be interesting. I mean, really, you look at it, the Sharks took they took a split. They had a really unlucky night with two shorthanded goals. I mean, that's really difficult at the NHL level. You know, the chances of that happening, you know, in the same season, let alone the same series, is remote. So now you're going to have Peter DeBoer that's going to have the last change, and McDavid won't be able to get away from Pavelski and Couture. And it'll be interesting to see how the Sharks respond. I'm still hopeful that DeBoer gives Thornton the rest. There was some video of him skating, and it didn't look good.
No,
not in my mind. And Joe Thornton doesn't have a step to lose.
No, and that's the thing too. Like, I get worried about Thornton being pushed back into the lineup too soon, just in a panic move. I think that in game one, Timo Meier got so under Lucic's skin, it was great. And, you know, the thing with Timo, though, is he doesn't take the stupid penalties, at least in the NHL. In the AHL, he's taken a ton of stupid penalties.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really nervous about Michael Haley drawing back into the lineup in Game 3 because, you know, this is a job that Timo Meier was doing well without the stupid penalties. And love Michael Haley, but Michael Haley can take some really dumb penalties. And that scares me.
You know, I'm really not too worried about who's the banger and crasher down there on the fourth line. I think Timo did an okay job. I think Michael Haley can do an okay job. Michael Haley's drawn his share of penalties as well.
Yeah, yes, I agree.
You know, but he's got that ability. as you say, to, you know, to take a silly penalty here or there, but he also has the ability to drop the gloves and do something about it.
Right.
So, you know, as somebody that still thinks fighting does have a place in the NHL, within very strict parameters, you know, I would be okay with it. I'm, again, you know, this gets back to what's been our topic. The amount of time spent on Michael Haley is disproportionate to his role.
Nope, I
If
agree.
Timo Meier's 7 minutes is somehow the game breaker with Michael Haley's 6.5 minutes, something has gone terribly wrong. That
Fair.
shouldn't be much of an impact.
Right.
The part that should be looked at, it's the you know, Pavelski hasn't been much of a factor. Couture has been more of a defensive factor. You know, Couture, it's tough to say giving a pass because this is the postseason. You know,
Yeah.
nobody's 100%.
Nope.
Probably nobody less so than Logan Couture with half a face.
For sure.
You know, everyone's got to hack that out. And then once again, you know, we're right back to Bodker, and this gets back to Vince G, and there were a couple questions about Bodker.
Yeah.
Bodker is literally, his production per game has dropped by half over last season.
Oh, yeah.
He is tied for 16th on the team in points per game with Paul Martin and Dylan DeMello.
That's bad.
You know who's above him?
Michael Haley.
Well, not quite that bad. Barclay
Oh,
Goodrow, Danny O'Regan, Kevin LeBanc, and Ryan Carpenter all have better points per game average.
that's brutal. That's not even good. But yeah, Bodker, look at man, this I don't care how, you know, he has like these this couple of good games and then everyone's all like, "Oh, look, this signing's a disaster." Period. This is one of, you know, and look at, I understand the reason that they brought Bodker in and what they thought he could bring to the team, but it just hasn't worked out, and it's probably one of Doug Wilson's worst signings in a while.
And you know, this gets to my gripe. You know, last year in the Stanley Cup Finals, I pretty strongly felt that Dylan DeMello should have inserted into that lineup to try to find something, try to get some skating back there. Roman Pulak was being exposed every other shift, but that call it loyalty, call it support, call it whatever you want, that the DeBoer has. We're seeing it with Bodker. You know how abysmal his play has been for long stretches this season. He sat one game. He played 81 games this season. Actually, so Christine just asked this question, and I'm going to jump all over this. I know
Do it.
hindsight is 2020, but were there any red flags with Bodker? Bodker is a red flag. He himself is a red flag. Last year, the Coyotes, and if you can go back and look it up, it was Bodker, if I remember correctly, was like top three in the entire NHL in power play time. And that almost never happens for a forward. That's usually like a Brent Burns defender, you know, somebody that doesn't have to skate too much out there on the power play that can conserve energy.
Correct.
The Coyotes showcased him so hard on the power play. Here's another stat. Last year, 15-16, Bodker had 18 power play points out of his 51, if I remember correctly, at 51 points between Colorado and
Arizona.
Arizona. Guess how many power play points he had this year?
Zero. More
One.
than that. One, yeah. But it was, I knew it was like, I'm like, he probably has something, but man, it's
Right.
not close to nearly enough.
Not points, point, singular.
Yeah.
You know, not two. You know, that's crazy. And to see, I mean, that's a huge chunk of that production. And so, hey, kudos to the Coyotes, right? Because they got Colorado to buy on that, and then the Sharks doubled down.
They most certainly
And
did.
that was a huge red flag signing. For $4 million, I thought that that was a little rich. I thought Bodker in the 2.5 to 3-ish range would have been safe, but with this level of regression in his point production, I mean, it's really tough to argue that he should have a role over, I would put Kevin LeBanc in this lineup over
I
Michael
was just
Bodker.
gonna say that, like at this point, like, and that's the frustrating thing with Peter DeBoer too, because you know that he's not gonna pull a veteran like Bodker out. He's gonna do some peripheral, you know, he'll pull Sorensen out and put LeBanc in, or pull Timo out and put LeBanc in, and keep, you know, trotting Bodker out there in the top power play unit, and it's frustrating to watch, you know, and
He's had
we'll
81
get.
games to get going. If he's not going by now, it
Right.
ain't that ain't going nowhere.
And you know what? I mean, look at, I understand, like, it's not just on the coach, but man, Peter DeBoer has really burned up, for at least for me, he's burned up a ton of goodwill that he built up last year. Like, I am not a huge Peter DeBoer guy this year at all. You know, where last year I probably would have defended him to the end of the earth. And I and you know, and to a lesser extent, I would say that about Martin Jones to an extent too, where he, you know, he's burned up some goodwill that he definitely built up last year. And it's not, you know, I'm not saying that Jones is a bad goalie. It's just that he's, man, some of those goals he's let in this series, though, not good.
But I go back and forth on this. I don't see Martin Jones as an elite goaltender.
Neither do I. So I guess I should be happy that he just is. Like, I know where you're going with this, and maybe that even though I don't see him as an elite goaltender, I still have maybe higher expectations than I should. But it's just, I mean, man, so frustrating this playoff so far.
Yeah, his medium danger save percentage has been even below his already below average career average. That's a lot of averaging in the averages. But in this series, none of his goals, I think, have been from a really, nasty area in the ice, and we kind of saw that through the Sharks' rough spell in March. The flip side of it is Connor McDavid has one of the filthiest releases on earth.
Oh,
So,
for sure.
I mean, him letting one loose from the blue line is dangerous.
Oh yeah, I mean, look at Connor McDavid can flat out play, and I know everyone's sick of hearing it, but it's just the truth. The kid's special. Like, I've been watching
Definitely.
this kid blow people up since he was 15.
Exactly.
Like, you know, he's a guy that's just he's insane. Like, you know, it's hard, and you know that's why I was so happy in the first game when, you know, when T-Mac was kind of going power for power and he was putting McDavid out against Couture, and I'm just laughing because I'm like, could you pick a more dumb place to put Connor McDavid against? And you know, and obviously he corrected that in the second game a little bit more, but I mean, if you can give McDavid a healthy serving of Pickles and Couture, then I like the Sharks' chances. But you get away from that, and it's not going to be a fun time.
I thought Vlasic was certainly better, than what we saw in the at the end of the regular season. I thought Braun, he's still had two rough games, and that,
Oof, that
he's,
flamingo.
yeah,
No
and
bueno.
so, and it's kind of like Bergman, right? You have Vlasic that's trying to play defense for one and a half people.
Yeah.
That's a tough thing.
No, I look at I like look at I you know I and I said before, a big key, the X factor in the series for me was always going to be Vlasic, because if Vlasic can't, you know, you can't it, look at Vlasic's never going to completely shut down McDavid. No
No.
one is going to completely shut down McDavid, but you can try and contain him, and I think so far Vlasic's done a very admirable job of that, and thank God, because otherwise this series would be a joke.
Yeah, I mean, it's damage mitigation.
Yeah, you're not going to stop it, but you can reduce it.
I mean, if you can keep Connor McDavid to just under a point a game in a 6-7 game series, that's a hell of a job by your entire team defense. Just is. But the Sharks, and this has been our kind of our talking points for a while. The Sharks' big horses need to get back on track. Brent Burns is he's the cup, he's the ice, and he's the straw in the Sharks' offensive drink. And with him pretty much under like a Captain America deep freeze as far as his offensive, really for the last, we're going on 6 weeks now.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a bit 4 weeks, you know, but he's been ice cold.
Yeah.
And you're seeing that trickle down offense. He's meant so much. If there was any question if Brent Burns was the MVP of the Sharks, I would say the last 4 weeks have proven just how important Brent Burns is to this organization.
With Pavelski, because you brought up Pavelski earlier too, and you know, some kind of a drum that I've been kind of beating is you know, I'm not really surprised because I've always I think Pavelski's a really good player, but I feel like the fact that he's been attached at the hip with Joe Thornton is a bigger factor there than people want to give it credit for.
Joe Thornton hands out assists and paychecks to his wingers.
Yep.
That's what he's done his entire career. You know, Pavelski got paid before that, but yeah, is Joe Pavelski a 40 goal scorer without Joe Thornton setting the table for Brent Burns and Pavelski, who tirelessly works at his craft of tipping pucks?
Not me trying to take a dump on Joe Pavelski.
I don't want everyone to freak out.
For sure.
You know, Dale Andrechuk was kind of the last really excellent net front presence that I kind of remember, and Pavelski kind of harkens back to that lost art.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's, you know, has he worked his butt off to be in a position to be successful? Certainly.
Absolutely.
Would he be nearly that successful without Brent Burns and Joe Thornton? Yeah, I think that's equally true.
Yeah.
I think this is a nexus of a player realizing what's around him, what he offers, and working hard to offer it game in, game out. And all of a sudden, the sum is greater than, you know, the parts.
Yep. Yeah, no, and I think that's something that, you know, I know Sharks fans don't like that per se, but it's something that they, you know, that I think shouldn't be completely ignored that he's not there. Let's just kind of quickly go around the other series quick, because I know we're marathoning this thing, and I got to get out of here. What's going on with Chicago Nashville? I know there were some questions about Darling starting. This isn't on Corey Crawford, man. Corey Crawford's doing everything but score. The fact that the Blackhawks have no goals to start this thing, I can't even wrap my head around it. This is a team that they're going to screw up my perfect, last, I think, 3 years of correct cup predictions before the playoffs start. And I'm really angry at them for it.
I mean, I know Dylan Wells just had a goal. You know, he's the latest goalie to score. But, I mean, what's Corey Crawford going to do? You know, just... you know, make a huge glove save, drop it to the ice, go coast to coast, and finally get the Blackhawks on the board, especially on a team that has Patrick Kane, you know, the bread man. They've got Hossa. I mean, you look at who they've got,
mm-hmm.
and there is absolutely no reason Chicago should be blank like this.
No,
you know,
I mean... should you know? Can they lose games? Sure, they could. You know, they could lose games, but I mean, to get shut out in both games so far, I can't wrap my head around it. I wish I could explain it. I wish I had a reason for it. I mean, I wish I watched more of the series. But man, and then Pekarinen, he's been good enough. I don't know.
I think he's been the story of it. I mean, he's been kind of resurgent.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, no, I mean, for a lot of, you know, for a lot of me being dumb and saying, you know, these goalies aren't good anymore, I'm being proven very wrong, which is a great segue to what, you know, St. Louis and Minnesota. Again, this is a guy where Jake Allen is, I had no faith in Jake Allen being able to win a playoff series. And yet here we are.
Jake Allen continues to perplex me. I don't know what to even think.
It's a voodoo thing. It really is. I mean, I know you always say goalies are voodoo, but this man,
See? I wouldn't lie to you, Ian. I'd fib to you, but that's different.
That's completely different. No, I
Totally
understand.
different.
But I mean, it does. It goes back to what you say about goalies, man. They're voodoo. Like, Jake Allen's a guy who, they left him at home.
Right.
They left him at home at one point in the season, and now here he is, and look at, I think that Minnesota's a good team. I think that they're not as, maybe they're not as great as their record indicates, but I still thought that they would just plow through the Blues.
I certainly did not think that the Blues had any of this in them, and
No.
especially after being sellers at the deadline,
Right.
this has been a really impressive showing, and maybe this team really was being held back by Hitchcock. I know that's
Maybe.
not a popular narrative. But Hitch doesn't have a, he has a reputation of a coach that is really hard long term. He
Right.
grades on players. So,
He's like one of those, like he's like an old school guy, right? Like he's the guy that you bring in, you get quick returns, and then they diminish and diminish and diminish over
right.
time. It kind of like reminds me of like, to pull a name out of a hat, like a Mike Keenan, who could come in, Pat Burns, these guys could come in, they'd get you results quickly, but then the team would finally just be too worn down by them.
When half your team marches into the general manager's office, say, just trade us.
Right.
That's a tough thing. And old Iron Mike, that was
Someday, could we
brutal.
have a coaches show? Yeah, I guess. I guess. Yeah, anything can
Just
happen.
on coaches?
I don't know. Could we do an hour and a half on coaches? Maybe.
I think we could do an hour and a half on anything.
We probably could. It's probably true.
I don't know. Have we ever been under an hour and a half? Ever?
I don't think so. I don't think so. And could you imagine adding another person to this insanity? Like, we talk enough. We'll get some new voices in here at some point, but man, we talk so much.
Especially me. God, I can't stand it.
Yeah, so I mean, with that, with Hitchcock, good luck, Dallas.
That was kind of a strange. Well, it was a strange signing, but then I kind of thought about it more. And you look at what that team needs, where it has no defensive identity.
Right.
It seems just like, it's fun and gun. It's a game of shinny out there. And so if there's somebody where, the owner is familiar with, and you look at obviously the pedigree of Ken Hitchcock and the teams he's constructed, defense is not a concern on a Ken Hitchcock squad.
Shouldn't be.
His defensemen might want to club him, but the defensive play,
Yeah.
is not going to be
And
some.
with Young Demon, I mean, that's kind of like, it seems like the perfect guy to bring in.
For at least 2.5 years.
For 2.5 years. And then, yeah, move on. Were you surprised that Gallant was the guy in Vegas?
Yes.
Who
Yeah,
do you think they were going to bring in?
I really like Lindy Ruff there.
Me too. Yeah. Lindy Ruff was a guy that I thought for sure would probably be a lock for that job, but I don't know if I was surprised by Gallant, but I mean it makes sense. I think if I would have made a list of guys that would probably go to Vegas that couldn't just kind of pick and choose, or like a Darryl Sutter can pick and choose his job. He's not going to
And
Vegas.
he's not going to an expansion team.
That's exactly it. But I thought like a guy like Ruff would make a lot of sense there. I thought a guy like not only Ruff, but I thought Gallant makes sense. He might have been my number two for that job.
Yeah, it's like Hitchcock, and again, you look at the coaches that would be interested in that kind of effort.
Right.
I couldn't see a Ken Hitchcock going to an expansion team.
No.
Darryl Sutter coaching an expansion team, I'll bet my farm against his farm any whole day of the week.
Do you think Daryl Sutter's done?
Boy, that's a great question. You know, he when he left the Sharks, you know, he went back to his farm, you know,
Or Calgary.
Alberta, Calgary. That's right. You know, and he seemed really happy, and you know, and then I guess just kind of got, you know, the itch that had to be scratched. There's only one way to scratch that. I don't know. You know, he's got the Stanley Cups. He's done so much. I think it is. You know, it's turning into a different NHL. You know, you're seeing more of the young minds and people looking at analytics and at least bringing that into the conversation in the coaches' rooms. I think Sutter's era of coaching is coming to a close. So I think it would be you know, it's not him going out the way he probably wants, but
I was
yeah.
surprised. I was surprised. I mean, obviously, with Lombardi getting fired at the same time, it doesn't make sense to be like, well, he's retiring and we're firing the GM. Like, they both kind of had to go out together, like, as a firing. I think if Lombardi stuck around, I think that that's instead of firing him, they would have said, oh, yeah, he's retiring. But it just, now that he's been fired, I don't, you know, maybe it burns him a little bit. I mean, there's got to be a team out there that would still probably pay him a pretty penny to come in and coach their team. But yeah, I
But
don't know. I mean,
really,
there's a
what
lot of
jobs?
messes. Yeah, there's a lot of messes that he would have to walk into at
Right.
this point. And I don't think that Sutter would be, because I mean, does Sutter really want to coach the Vancouver Canucks? Probably not.
No, I mean that you look at the teams that he's taken over and they've had the pieces in place and they just needed a sturdy, stable bench boss to
What about
guide the
Florida
ship.
then?
That makes a lot more sense. Like Vancouver's a mess, you know,
Right,
just
Vancouver's a complete gong show, for
you
sure.
know, they're hanging on to the Sedin era while sabotaging their young players. I would pay many, many US dollars to see Sutter and Goldobin spend 82 games together. That might be the Canadian version of Thunderdome.
Oh, that'd be excellent.
Yeah.
I want it.
You know what? That's Canada Cup 2017. Canada versus Russia like that? Oh, man. That would go at least 8 games. God, that'd be funny. Wouldn't that be funny?
Oh, that'd be hilarious. If I mean I think a part of like Willie Desjardins getting let go there, I mean, was just his basically refusal to look at like him or not. I mean, the Jim Benning brought Goldobin in to be the part of the plan, and I think that Desjardins not wanting to get on board with the plan is a big part of why he's out.
Yeah, but part of that is you
Not
know,
just for Goldobin's. I'm not saying Goldobin got, Desjardins fired, but
no. But you look at the pieces that they've given, you know, that they gave Willie, you know, out there in Vancouver. It is the most. It's the island of misfit, mismatched. I mean, when I was a kid, I used to take apart my G.I. Joes and put them back together with like different pieces from different G.I. Joes. That roster is more eclectic than that.
That's true.
You know, it has, I
No,
mean,
it's really it's so messed up. Like it is. It's such a gong show team.
yeah,
Let's get back to the playoffs quick.
absolutely no direction whatsoever.
No, and it'll be interesting to see what they do this summer.
Yeah, I mean, Vancouver is the only team not headed somewhere. They are just in purgatory.
Right. Let me just bring up the things here because I
Sorry.
want to talk about.
Wait, which playoffs? Because now we have AHL playoffs and NHL playoffs.
We can talk AHL playoffs later. So you got a couple series where obviously, you got a couple. We've kind of went over the series. Pittsburgh, Columbus. You know what? I want to be surprised, but I'm not because it's Pittsburgh. Like,
Yeah.
it's Pittsburgh. I want to be surprised. I wanted Columbus to do well, but I mean, I don't think there was a worse team that Columbus could have drew in the first round?
I mean, Matt Murray goes down ahead of game one, their Stanley Cup winning goaltender, so they put in their other Stanley Cup winning goaltender,
right. Oh,
Marc-Andre Fleury.
And the Flower's been actually pretty good yet. I mean, maybe he'll implode later on. I don't know.
You know,
but
either
so far so good.
He's got a body of work. He's solid. I think he's underrated. He's going to land at a very like think of Marc-Andre Fleury with the NHL Jets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, excuse me, what is in this soda? You know, that turns good into a playoff caliber team. Or
I agree.
Fleury on Carolina.
They'll never get rid of Cam Ward, and I don't know why. Cam Ward has...
I know, but I mean, pretend for a moment that Carolina has something better than average AHL goaltending.
Okay.
So, and then pretend even further from that it's Marc-Andre Fleury, who will be on the trade market. That is a young, scary team mm-hmm. with a very capable netminder.
And you know, you want to talk about teams with up-and-coming defense, man. Carolina.
Oh,
it's silly. Like, all right, bouncing around here. Yeah, again, I'm not surprised by the Carolina CBJ series.
Jacob Slavin's a personal favorite of mine, and that's a name to remember out of the East Coast.
Obviously the Ducks, they look like they're hurtling towards overtime, tied with Calgary. I give Calgary credit. They come back in this game. They were down by two, so I'm glad to see that they're showing a little bit of fight. I still think Anaheim comes out of the series, but you know, good on them. Boston, Ottawa. Sorry. Do you have anything on the Ducks or?
I liked the Flames. There.
See, we disagree on stuff, guys. It happens.
And you know, I felt that kind of what we're seeing now. I think the Flames are scrappy. They've got some. You know, Sean Moneyhands is, mm-hmm. you know, one of the better young centers in the NHL. Brian Elliott, depending on what he had for breakfast, is a capable goaltender or below AHL replacement level. I'm not sure which. But, you know, he's got, 32 stops tonight? So pieces of it. I think that's going to be a better series than a lot of people expected. And I still like the Flames there.
Speaking of series that have kind of been better than I expected, this Bruins-Senator series, which I thought was going to be the dud of the first round,
mm-hmm.
that game today might have been the most fun I've had watching a playoff game that didn't involve the Sharks.
You know,
that
this
game today was fun.
Yeah, the Senators just simply all season long, by hook, by crook, I don't know if they've got a deal with the devil, they somehow win games.
Yeah.
As inexplicable as that roster is, I mean, just massive, you know, kudos to that whole side, you know, especially limping along Dion Phaneuf.
Yeah. Canadians, Rangers, I think that series is all tied up now. Mm-hmm. That's been an okay series. I think that New York, I think, has impressed me a lot. In that series, I think I didn't give New York enough when I was doing my picks. I don't think I gave New York enough credit for their game, and I am seeing the error in my ways now because those games have been pretty close. A lot of just they could go either way.
Rick Nash kind of woke up in that last game too, so
he did.
You know, Canadians might have their hand full, but Carey Price is still Carey Price.
He is, and I still think that the Canadians are going to pull this one out, but I don't think it's going to be as one-sided as I thought it was, which brings me to another series where I thought was completely going to be one-sided. I didn't think it was going to be one-sided. I thought it was going to be a little bit longer of a series, but, you know, the kids in Toronto tonight, man, they got it done, and they pulled it out, in Washington, rather, but, you know, they tied their series up in double overtime. I was kind of hoping for an extended Easter epic. We need a new Easter epic, I think. And we were kind of robbed of that tonight. But, I mean, you know, that's been a fun series to watch, too. And I'm glad that they're kind of giving the Caps all that they can handle. It's fun watching, you know, if the Oilers weren't playing the Sharks, I'd be jacked to watch them, too. I love watching, you know, these kids kind of blossom and stuff. And So to see it happening in Toronto, I don't think they win the series, but it's going to be a great experience for them. And, you know, I think that it's going to be, I think it's going to be a closer series than people. I think a lot of people thought, like, you know, Washington 4 or 5. I think I said Washington in 6. And I'm still pretty comfortable with that call.
Yeah, I think at some point, you know, you just look at all the pieces, right? You know, right. Roman Polak, who's playing for the Leafs, he's lost for the remainder of the postseason. I saw a tweet. That's not confirmed, but seeing preliminary reports there, you know, they've got obviously youth, speed, skill. Marner's been excellent. Kasperi Kapanen had 2 goals tonight, if I remember mm-hmm. correctly.
Yeah, including the game tire and game winner, I believe.
Yep. You know, Austin Matthews, not bad. You know, there's a lot of pieces, but I think Washington's just a good bit better at all positions, and their secondary scoring's been excellent. So.
Oh, Ducks are now up 3-2 with a late fluky goal.
Laysai.
Yeah, that is pretty fluky. I'm just watching the GIF now.
How bad is it?
It's just, you know, what is Elliot going to do there? Just a weird, I think it's the
weird bounce. I'm trying
to see. Yeah, it seems like a weird, I don't even know how the guy gets, like, I don't know who scored. Who did they get? How did he even get the, I don't even know. Like, I gotta see that. I need to see this in a bigger, not GIF box. Because my eyes are clearly failing me here. 4 minutes left in the period. That's a tough break for the Flames. So I guess, you know, we should probably wrap it up because I got to get out of here and do some Easter things. I think, you know.
Are you going to wear ears while you hide the eggs? Please tell me
yes. Yeah.
That's awesome.
We'll see. Obviously, thanks to everyone for watching. With the Barracuda playoffs coming up, I'm going to try and see what we can do about being awesome and on air. I don't know. It's going to be difficult because obviously Zach has things to do and I have to return to school at some point. So we'll see. I think I'm returning to school. We don't know. In the meantime, what I need you guys to do is help an Ian out. Right now, we're doing really well. We've launched the new site. We're starting to get our traffic back. So I guess what I need from you guys is if you come across an article that I or one of the other guys writes, liking is awesome, but retweeting is godly. You know, we just, you know, I obviously, I, you know, I appreciate that you like the post, but if it's something that, you know, you really like, please retweet it so that we can kind of, you know, regrow that writing audience a little bit that we kind of let go of. That would be super helpful to me, to Felix, to, you know, Joe, to any of the writers that that write stuff. Speaking of writing, today I wrote a piece. I don't know, what did you think of it, Zach?
I thought it was solid. I enjoyed it.
There you go. Basically, the piece was about basically how, you know, if you want to get angry, if Michael Haley draws in the lineup in Game 3, it's not Peter DeBoer you need to be angry with. It's the team on the ice. And I go to, you know, lengths to explain why that's the case. And I think I like the argument. Obviously, I was inspired enough to write it. I just think that the bigger issue isn't that Haley would draw in. It's the reason why Haley has to draw in. So give that a read. I won't spoil it anymore. You know, any feedback on my ratings is obviously fine. You know, leave a comment on the website. Send me a message on Twitter. You know, I love talking about this stuff. I have all the time in the world to interact with people. So definitely do that. Zach, any exciting things you have coming out?
I'm so behind in my writing. It's hilarious. I've got about 7 things in various states of disrepair. Hoping to have a piece out on Danny O'Regan in the next day or two, my Barracuda brief recapping the week and some quotes from around the team will be out tomorrow or Monday. Again, I'm a bit behind. U18s are underway. I really liked mm-hmm. Martinikas today for the Czech Republic, even though they lost 3-2 to Sweden.
Yes.
But then switched over and got to see the Canada overtime winner. So that was right. That was a nice goal.
Yeah, I need to start. There's so much going on right now. I can't even keep up.
I can never pronounce it. And I've been working on it. Stelios Mateos, the number two center for the Brandon Wheat Kings, had two goals. It's interesting. You know, he's a player that's kind of not getting a lot of love. I like him there late in the first round. I also need to. I'm working on the update for my 2017 draft rankings. That'll be up at Hockey Profits. Dauber prospects. I'm getting all my end of the year Barracuda and Shark prospect up. Those will be up in the next week. So it's going to be busy for me as we prepare for. And then I'll obviously have a San Jose Barracuda versus Stockton Heat preview coming up here in the next 48 hours. So plenty there. Follow me on Twitter at Zach the Bear. That's ZakkTheBear. Or for our Canadian viewers, ZakkTheBear.
Okay. And also, did I put a new top 20 prospect piece out recently? I did. It's on the Evil Empire, though, so you'll have to go search for it there. Also, obviously, tomorrow, right here after the game on this very channel, I keep wanting to say Pucknology, Teal Town After Dark will be live, obviously. I don't know who's on the show tomorrow, but they will obviously have you covered for all things Sharks. I am going to try to keep you guys up to date on all things Barracuda.
Vince G with some really good advice. So tomorrow's Easter, mm-hmm. and you've got a Warriors and A's and a Sharks game tomorrow. Whew.
Yeah.
With all that sugar.
Good luck with that, guys. I'm gonna watch some Sharks tomorrow. I'm gonna try and see what we can do about trying to, you know, go on after Barracuda games. But again, I don't want to make any promises yet. It's something that I want to discuss with other people, but it's obviously something I know there's a demand for, so we'll see what we can work out. Other than that, guys, have yourselves a great evening. Have yourselves a great Easter. And we'll be back sometime soon. Just keep an eye on the at TTG Reborn Twitter feed, and you will know, generally try and give warning of when we plan to go on. So... other than that, guys, again, thanks for everything. Have a good night. Happy Easter. Peace out.